Shannon back in the Young Turks. $127 from Shannon, Michigan. Bless your hearts. You know, at the 127, you guys are still getting the Trump shirt if you want it. Trump is a Night King in Game of Thrones. The night is dark and full of tweets. Fun shirt. $100 from Frank in California. $127 from Ryan in Washington. You know, at 270, you get a shirt, you get a thumb drive with all the soundboard stuff.
Sarabies.
You can tell your friends all day long.
Abi Kibar, Trump, Sarkar.
Your mama tweets in, to be fair, the Republican rallies, the people there always cheer when he talks about Obamacare repeal, so that's all that Trump knows. Yes, if you were a sophisticated person, you would know that, hey, some people like Obamacare, some people don't like Obamacare, some of the upsides, downsides, but Trump being a child, and I'm really being unfair to children here, but it's like, me no like Obamacare. Which part, Donald? I don't care, I don't know. The whole country hates it. That's what people would applaud when I say Obamacare is bad.
It's a complicated issue.
But who could have known? Nobody knew. Nobody knew that it was complicated.
It was so complicated.
And if anybody knew, it would be him because...
You know, I'm like a smart person.
Jesus Christ. Anyway. Hey, Jesus, can I see tytnetwork.com/go one more time here? 1.33329. Can I see, I haven't done this in a while. Can I see 385 by the end of the show? Well, probably not, right? But can we try? Let's hire more reporters.
Let's
come on. Look, the one thing I don't think we've done enough is investigate Trump enough. That's what I want to do next. Okay? And I know some of the folks that we would love to hire at that 1.5 number, and I think you guys would love them. So let's try to get there. Okay, Casper, what's next?
All right. Fox has settled a pretty serious sexual assault claim against a executive at, let me start that again. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, you were fine. You were fine, but nonetheless, go for it.
No, it was not fine.
No, okay, we're starting again, guys.
Lost my train of thought right off the bat. Okay. Fox has settled another sexual assault case with one of its former contributors. This woman is Tamara Holder, and it shockingly does not involve Roger Ailes, but it does involve another former executive with Fox News. Now, in late February, 21st Century Fox reached a settlement worth more than $2.5 million with a former Fox News contributor who reported that she was sexually assaulted by an executive at the company headquarters 2 years ago. So this assault allegedly, not allegedly, it happened 2 years ago in 2015, and she had contacted lawyers about possibly pressing charges, and lawyers didn't even really want to work with her because they thought that she didn't have a chance against an executive and that her name wasn't big enough for people to take her seriously.
It's so sick. Like, what does that mean? Why? What is your name being big or not big have anything to do with whether you were sexually assaulted or not? But they said that it might ruin her career, her agents, lawyers, etc. Because, well, then you become hard to work with.
You like become toxic. They use the word toxic.
We still live in this world. Isn't that amazing? I think for younger people, even for me, and I'm not that young, I find that shocking. Like, you're going to blame the victim and then say, oh, no, she's a troublemaker because she wouldn't let executives sexually assault her. Not harass her, assault her, as you're about to see.
Yes.
Right? And so we should discriminate against her.
Yeah.
But a lot of older Americans do think that way.
Now, why did Fox decide to settle this case? Let's go to graphic four. The network investigated her claims, and the executive, Francisco Cortez, the vice president for Fox News Latino, was terminated, according to two people familiar with the matter. Ms. Holder has said that Mr. Cortez, who was close with Mr. Ailes, invited her into his office, shut the door, then poured shots of tequila for each of them, according to a document drafted by Ms. Holder's lawyers that outlines her claims.
Hold on one second, Anna. Mm-hmm. So this is the point in the story where I was curious as I'm reading this New York Times description. Like, how do they do this? Like, how, it's so outrageous to me. How do you try to get a woman who's a contributor on air for you, who's a lawyer, who's an analyst, to try to sleep with you as an executive? What a weird, awkward, unbelievable thing, right?
Right. You would think that it would be, I don't know, coy, like...
Yeah.
Not aggressive or too overt. But no, this was an overt situation.
Yeah, no, I thought that they would like do some trick or some like persuasion. No. They're just animals, that's all. Here, listen to what happened.
Okay, so Mr. Cortez then got out of his chair, approached her chair, held the door shut with his left hand, and used his right hand to push her mouth toward his penis, which he had taken out of his pants, according to the document. Ms. Holder fled the room.
There are four people who corroborate this story.
Yes.
Okay. So, and obviously now Fox corroborates the story because they fired him and they paid her. So it happened apparently just like this. So this guy, Cortez, was good friends with Roger Ailes. Mm-hmm. And they probably had a good laugh over a beer about how Roger does this all the time, because now there's, when we now find out, there's dozens of cases where Roger Ailes did similar things. So Cortez thinks, well, the big guy's doing it and he's been getting away with it for decades.
Yes.
Why don't I give it a shot? I'll pour tequila shots, hold the door and see what I can do.
Yeah. So this is a very important story to follow up on what happened yesterday, which was, of course, International Women's Day. And, you know, there have been a number of young, attractive, blonde, conservative women arguing that these are just women who don't know what they're talking about. What are they protesting? Women have complete equality. They're just being victims. Nah, nah, nah. And so, no. This is the kind of activity that happens in companies for decades, and there's never any justice. Luckily, in this case, there have been a number of settlements, right? Just to give you a few examples, $20 million settlement with Gretchen Carlson, whose lawsuit against Mr. Ailes in July led to his ouster. A deal with Juliette Huddy, a longtime Fox News personality who made sexual harassment claims against the network's top-rated host, Bill O'Reilly. And now the agreement with Ms. Holder, who had been a legal and political analyst at Fox News since 2010. So next time a young conservative talking head is like, oh my God, like what's wrong with these women? Like they don't even understand that they're totally treated equal and they're just over there complaining about nothing. Yeah, how about you're young and you're attractive and maybe you haven't come across situations like this in the workplace, but a lot of women have. And they haven't been taken seriously and they get brushed under the rug, right? And their careers in a lot of cases get destroyed if they have the audacity to come forward. But that's just one of the things that women were out there, you know, talking about yesterday. So just keep all of that in mind. Don't pretend like women are completely equal to men in every workplace. And just because you are a young, white, privileged conservative girl who's given a job on television doesn't mean that your experiences are the same as the experiences of other women. And by the way, give me a call when you're, I don't know, 40, and we'll see where you're at in your life.
Yeah, so it's the same thing as with most conservatives. They have no empathy.
Yeah.
So they're like, wait, I wasn't sexually harassed, so I guess there must be no sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that it happened to other people and that you should try to help them fight back? I don't know, it didn't happen to me, so I don't care at all.
Wait, I don't know, it didn't happen to me. I'm blonde and I'm hot and I have perky tits and that's all that matters.
Right, and I'm also used because people think I'm attractive, but there's no sexual harassment and there's no judging people based on their looks. Are you sure about that? Right? So anyway, in this case is much more serious, but you see the culture at Fox News where the top anchor does it, the top boss does it, the other executives do it, because ever since they've been in business, Roger Ailes has been authorizing it, doing it himself. And it goes all the way back to, and I mentioned older Americans, of course, most older Americans are wonderful people, but there is that older culture that still exists with some of the executives, some of the top executives who are in their 60s and 70s, the Mad Men era. And that's where Roger Ailes came from. And back when he ran a talk show on television, when he was the producer of it, he would audition girls and he would demand oral sex. And if they didn't give him oral sex, they never got to be on the show. So that's what he grew up in and thought that was perfectly normal. You either have sex with them or you sexually assault them. He did the same thing Cortez did in one of the cases from the 1980s where he took out his penis and chased a woman around the room with it. Okay.
Oh, God.
So Cortez thinks, well, that's par for the course. This is what we do at Fox News. And remember,
family values, guys.
Exactly. This is the network that claims they're for family values. You have to understand how monumentally full of shit they are. So when you hear family values on Fox News, remember their executives with their penises out chasing women around who are legal analysts, for Christ's sake. I mean, it doesn't matter who they are, but they have no respect for anyone. including their top hosts.
Yep.
They did it to Megyn Kelly, apparently. Not the assault, but the harassment. They did it to Gretchen Carlson and all these conservative women who are like, oh, what's all the big deal and all the fuss about? And all of a sudden it happens to them. They're like, whoa, that's crazy. And now it's happening to me. I didn't know that. Really, when you got hired at Fox News and they told you you couldn't wear pants, that you had to wear short skirts on TV, and you had to sit in a position where men could always look at your legs, then you're surprised that this turns out not to be a family values channel, but a channel run by perverts. Shocked and chagrined.
All right. Moving on to other news. A law lecturer from Australia is facing more than 900 separate child sex charges after investigators found that he was posing as Justin Bieber online in order to lure underage girls and exploit them. His name is Gordon Douglas Chalmers, and there was a story about him in late November last year that we covered, and now we have more details about what happened. Now, authorities from the United States and Germany alerted police officials in Australia about him, and there was an investigation. They found some pretty terrible evidence regarding his sex crimes. Now, Chalmers was charged with using a carriage service to procure and groom children for sex and to access child pornography. He was also charged with possessing child porn. Now, when they looked into his computers and searched his home, they found that he was using Facebook and Skype in order to lure young girls. At least 157 child victims have been identified at this point. 50 of them are from the United States, 6 of them are from Australia, the rest are from other parts of the world. His Skype account had 123,000 conversations with 6,000 contacts, many of which were underage girls.
Jesus, man. So this is the kind of stuff that scares the hell out of parents, that there's perverts online who are posing as, and look, kids are impressionable. They don't know. They haven't lived a full life. They're going after, you know, teens, and imagine, like, they want to believe Justin Bieber contacted them. It's so exciting. If you like Justin Bieber and the thought that he might contact, you want to believe it. You desperately want to believe it. And so he lures him in that way, and it looks like he says, okay, now send me pictures of yourself. And they think it's Bieber, and they're like, well, okay, it's Bieber, and I'll do that. And then he takes the pictures and he goes, hey, I got pictures of you. I'll release them to your parents, to the internet, so you better do X, Y, and Z. And next thing you know, 931 child sex offenses.
It's insane. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to say about this. I'm glad that he was caught, but they found evidence of his crimes dating back to 2007. So it's been happening for a long time. And luckily he did get caught thanks to authorities in 3 different countries that, you know, investigated this and found out that he was doing something wrong. But I think more than anything, people need to, you know, recalibrate the way they talk to kids about the internet, right? And so I think that parents, unfortunately, are now forced to talk about really uncomfortable topics very early on in a child's life.
Yep.
And so, especially when it comes to the internet, you gotta monitor everything they do. But even if you try to do that, it's nearly impossible, right? They're gonna have access when you don't even know it. You just have to educate your kids as much as possible about what potential harm there is out there. If anyone asks your kids for a nude picture, you gotta make sure you equip them with the knowledge that that is unacceptable. They cannot do that. Because that's how this starts. They convince these kids to send nudes or whatever it is, and then it snowballs from there. They exploit them. They'll tell them that, hey, I'm gonna share this. They blackmail them, and so they're kids. They're kids.
Yeah, and by the way, it goes to both sexes. And so this has almost become the new Nigerian prince email scam that they used to do. So there, we did a story about a guy who gets young boys to send him pictures by posing to be a girl. And so they get excited, oh, I'm gonna have sex with a girl, and they send the pictures of their genitalia, and then he turns around and says, okay, I'm gonna release it unless you do X, Y, and Z. So unfortunately, you gotta talk to your kids pretty damn young to let them know that there's predators like that online. And look, the internet is wonderful in 1,000 different ways, but it's also filled with people who are not what they appear to be. And by the way, they live among us, man. This Guys, a 42-year-old law lecturer goes around giving lectures on the law.
Yes.
Then goes home and does this. It's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah. All right, moving on to some political news.
Oh, I love this story.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dan Savage was recently talking about Melania Trump on his show Savage Love, and he did go savage against Melania Trump. Now, a lot of liberals are arguing that, hey, Melania Trump should be off limits. Just because she happens to be the first lady doesn't mean that she should be attacked. But Dan Savage isn't buying it. In fact, he had some pretty harsh words for the first lady that I want to read to you. He said, God knows there's enough hate in the world, and I don't want to add to the sum total, but forgive me. I have to get this off my chest. I fucking hate Melania Trump.
Damn, shots fired.
Yeah, so he continues, I'm not alone in loathing Donald Trump's third wife. She's married to a misogynist after all. Odds are good her husband hates her too.
That's okay. A funny twist of logic.
Yes, okay. Yes. Now, here's the part that I actually do agree with him on. There's considerable disagreement between the two of us on the story, but here's the part I do agree with. He says, there are some folks on the left who not only don't hate her, they view her as some sort of sympathetic figure. The pretty princess in the tower locked up by the orange ogre with a bad comb over, a princess desperately blinking out distress signals during swearing in ceremonies and inaugural balls. Okay, so I actually really do hate that perception that some liberals have, right? They'll you know, analyze her body language and they're like, oh, poor Melania, you know, like she's held captive and this. No, she made her decision. She just never really wanted to be the first lady and she never expected it, but she made her decision. She wanted to marry him. They're married. You know, I don't think that she's held captive at all. And so don't cry for her in that regard. But my argument is, you know, don't go after her for ridiculous things like the fact that she posed nude or that she did salacious photo shoots. She was a model, and who cares if she did that? That's not worth attacking her for.
Yeah, there are different parts where me, you, and Dan Savage agree and disagree.
Yes.
So he goes on to say that he thinks that some liberals don't want to attack her because she's pretty, and they assume that being pretty means that you're pretty on the inside. No. I don't know any liberals who think that. No, I don't know where he got that from.
We attack pretty people all the time.
Yes,
like Tommy Lauren's pretty. We attack her.
Sarah Palin's pretty. I mean, you should see the videos we've done on her.
Yeah.
And the list goes on and on. I don't think her attractiveness has anything to do with it at all.
No.
So I don't know where he got that from. Okay, now, but he did swing me on the substance. Now, you shouldn't attack her just for being a first lady. I actually defended Laura Bush significantly, and some people would bring out Bush did a car accident in her youth, and they say, oh, she's this and that. Like, guys, this, look, that was an accident, and she's not her husband. She tries to rein him in from time to time, but anyway, she's not a political person. I don't care about her.
Right.
And, like, there's no need to go into that. There's just, and it's same thing with conservatives that went after Michelle Obama. But Melania Trump has entered the political sphere in a couple of different ways.
She has. We have an example for you. So I want to go ahead and toss to that. Let's take a quick look and see what Melania Trump had to say about Obama's citizenship.
Do you want to see President Obama birth certificate or not?
I've seen it.
It's not the birth certificate.
Well, it's a certificate of live birth,
right,
which they give. But Melania, if he insists on what he's saying, then no one in Hawaii can ever run for president because they all get the same live birth certificate.
Well, but they need to have.
Bette Midler is finished, for example.
They need to have, and in one way, it will be very easy if President Obama just show it, and because it's not only Donald who wants to see it. It's American people who voted for him and who didn't vote for him. They want to see that.
Yeah, no, I can't stand her. So the number one reason that gets under my skin is not the usual racism that goes along with that. It's that she's an immigrant.
Yeah.
And then we found out during the campaign that actually it looks like she had the wrong kind of visa. She didn't have permission to work. She did it anyway. In some ways, she was an illegal immigrant.
Yeah.
And then she has the nerve to turn around and say, Obama's not a real American. Okay, spare me your views on real Americans, Melania Trump, who came here on the wrong visa. Okay, and married a guy for, all right, if it's not for money, it's actually worse. But I want to save that to the end about my views on Melania and marrying Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. But so, look, if you thought Michelle Obama entered the political sphere by saying kids should stay in shape, okay, I guess you could attack her for that. No, kids shouldn't stay in shape, right? But Laura Bush wanted kids to read. No, kids shouldn't read. But generally, those are kind of harmless, right? Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton, by the way, when she was the first lady, did enter the political sphere. She tried to do the healthcare proposal.
Yes.
And you want to attack her on that policy, totally fair game, right? And Melania, in this regard, is a giant hypocrite. And I think Dan Savage made an even better point on the policy grounds. He said she's going after journalists and bloggers with giant lawsuits saying they're interfering with her ability to profit off of her role as first lady.
There is nuance in that, and I don't think that he was fair in making that statement.
So okay, why? What do you think is the nuance?
So the Daily Mail, which is a tabloid outlet from the UK, had essentially published something that indicated that she had worked as an escort, okay? Mm-hmm. Which is defamatory. There's no evidence that she worked as an escort, and the Daily Mail actually took that piece down as a result. And so she is suing the Daily Mail for defamation. And during the lawsuit, one of her lawyers said that this defamation is harmful to her career because it could affect her ability, her once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sell her products because, you know, she has this once-in-a-life opportunity as the first lady. So that's the nuance.
I don't think that's unfair at all.
I do think it's unfair.
If you say that the Daily Mail is wrong, I agree with you.
Yeah.
If you say she should sue, okay, I get it. It's a little weird because you're the first lady, but I get it. I understand. And if, you know, if somebody says something about you that's that wrong and that and it's bad, I get it, right? But saying I have a once in a lifetime opportunity to get rich as first lady.
No, she deserves to get criticized for that because you are not supposed to use your position as first lady to profit and sell your product. So I agree with that criticism. But that statement of she's brought ruinous lawsuits against journalists and bloggers. No, she's brought a lawsuit against a tabloid that implied that she worked as an escort. And that's not the same as going after journalists.
Yeah. Now, look, non-political for a second on Melania Trump. And Savage goes on saying Melania Trump is as ugly on the inside as she is pretty on the outside. I don't know why Melania Trump got so much under Dan Savage's skin. Uh-huh. I haven't given it this much thought because she hasn't been in the political sphere that much.
Right.
Right. Other than some of the things we just outlined. Right. But and she's a plagiarist. I don't care at all. Apparently, a lot of people are plagiarists. It right. happens much more frequently than I realized. Okay. She married Donald Trump. Now, let's break it down. There's two possibilities. One is, keep it real, she married him for the money. Okay. Now, let's give her the benefit of the doubt and say she didn't do that. That's unfair. You don't know that. Maybe they have a deep connection, right? Okay, think about that. Think about how much worse that is. She has a connection with this guy. Like, we know how much of a narcissist, empty-headed fool he is. She met this guy and was like, oh my God, he's the Donald. Almost everything he says is a lie. He's an imbecile. He goes around saying,
you know, I'm like a smart person.
I'm like a smart person. And who knew healthcare could be so complicated? Nobody knew. Nobody knew. I mean, he's a class A moron.
I mean,
and he's like obsessed with himself. He brags nonstop. He lies nonstop. Melania looked at that guy and thought, he is the one guy in the world I can't wait to spend the rest of my life with.
But it goes further than that because, yeah, he's a narcissistic moron. There's no question about that. But there's also the way that he treats women, the way that he refers to women, calling them, you know, fat pigs, you know, talking about grabbing them by their genitalia, like and all of that stuff.
Some of those, by the way, sexual harassment or sexual assault stories came out, was happening while he was married to Melania Trump.
Yes.
And in the middle of an interview about what a great family life they had, when Melania went upstairs while she was pregnant, he tried to get the reporter to have sex with him. Okay, that's the classy guy he is. But look, I don't want to parse this particular issues in their marriage because people got issues in their marriage. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But anyone who married Donald Trump and thought, I nailed it, this guy's the best guy in the world, at a minimum, you've got judgment issues. Okay, I'm not sure I trust your judgment. At a minimum.
At a minimum. All right, that's all we got to say about that. Let's take a break.
All right, when we come back, vets get stood up by Donald Trump. Of course. Okay, but how so, I will tell you. And a trend that I think Anna kind of likes and I despise.
Okay.
Okay, a little bit of drama, a little bit of controversy on that when we return. All right. here are the great Americans donating for Watchdog Journalism. $127 from Sharon in Michigan, $100 from Frank in California, and $127 from Ryan in Washington. There are not a lot of people doing Watchdog Journalism. I told you the story today of CNN hiring a former Trump spokesperson after he spit in their face. That is not our intention. Our intention is to do the exact opposite. So can I see where tyrtnetwork.com/go is at? Let's bring that up while I read. Oh my God. We almost got to 385.
Whoa.
Let's see. We'll check in on it one more time before the end of the show and see if we can get to 1385. Remember, this is ends at the first 100 days of Donald Trump. And tomorrow is the halfway point. And then we won't be able to do this anymore. And if we don't get to some of our goals, we won't be able to hire some of the journalists we're dying to hire. Okay. Deborah Handler says, as a New York City taxpayer, I have no sympathy for Melania. Sasha Ray says, right wingers attacked Michelle Obama for years. Time to stop taking the high road. Melania makes her choices. There are consequences.
I know. Look, I totally agree in some ways, right? Like, as I mentioned on the show before, like, it was annoying to hear the debates about whether or not it's okay to punch a Nazi. But like in this case with Melania Trump, attack her where she deserves to get attacked, right? Attacking her for modeling or posing nude is ridiculous. You don't want to lower yourself to those nasty conservatives that attacked Michelle and called her like a chimp in heels or whatever it is that they said. Like, I don't want to be associated with people like that.
Yeah.
You know?
No, there's nothing wrong with her being nude. That's not the issue at all.
Yeah. So
member shout outs today are Sue Olmsted and Maureen Fallon. And I got to be honest with you. Yesterday's post game with John Iadarola was actually bananas.
I don't believe you.
No, it was really good. Edwin agrees. It was one of our better ones. Sorry. That happened. It happened. Okay?
Oh, someone from the boys club thinks that the male only post game was good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's, all right. Well, I'm telling you right now.
I want to drag someone in the post game today. Oh. Not anyone here.
I don't even know what that means. That sounds like pretty brutal. What are we doing?
It's just someone got under my skin and I want to bitch about it.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Did you think I was going to like physically?
Like somebody, see what happens now. Okay, oh, Jesus.
Oh, man.
Okay. Oh, did you see Game of Thrones coming out?
I did see it. Yeah, I'm
July.
Excited.
Yeah. Anyways, so if you want to watch the post games, tytnetwork.com/join. Members get the whole 2-hour show ad free too. And I also, in the post game today, other than Anna's vicious dragging, we will also be finally talking about the deep state.
Oh.
Oh yeah. Anna, become a member. Check out the post game from yesterday and see if I'm right about it.
Okay.
Okay. All right, let's go forward.
All right. When Donald Trump was campaigning to be president, one talking point that he had, and he was very consistent about it, was his priority of helping veterans. He was angry at how veterans were treated in the healthcare system, and so he wanted to prioritize helping them as much as possible. Now, fast forward to Trump's administration, where Trump is president, and he's singing a different tune, and it seems as though he has no interest in even meeting with vets. In fact, since he got elected, he has not met with veterans a single time. And now vets are starting to get really upset about it. Now, apparently there was a meeting just this week with vets in the White House, and they thought that there was a huge possibility that they would finally get a face-to-face meeting with the president, and that didn't happen. So Tuesday's meeting, which was first reported by the Military Times, included Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin, former apprentice contestant Omarosa Manigault, and a handful of White House staffers. Several attending the meeting said they fully expected they would have met with Trump by this point in the administration. Trump himself has still not met face-to-face with veterans groups since he was elected president.
Okay, let's pause here. Now, and I think you're being a little fair. I mean, the veterans, after all their sacrifice, and you know, there's some of them lost limbs, you know, traumatic brain injuries, they lost their friends, at least they got Omarosa.
They got Omarosa. And look, to be fair to Trump, he is president, and the president has very important meetings to attend. So some of those meetings on that day, while the vets were in the White House, Trump was meeting with senators in the White House, I'm sorry, tourists in the White House basement, leaders of the AFL-CIO, and also the Boy Scouts.
Hmm.
Huh? So, you know, meeting with the Boy Scouts is way more important than meeting with the vets that you prioritized in your campaign.
You remember that big event that he did when he ran away from the Megyn Kelly debate?
Yeah.
When he was a coward, and then he says, oh yeah, I'm going to do an event for veterans. They raise money for veterans. So he surrounded himself with veterans when he was running.
Yes.
Now that he won, I'm done with you guys. Here, send in some reality show contestant to deal with them.
So they're legitimately upset, and I'll give you some of the quotes from these vets in just a second. But for anyone who is a vet, and first of all, thank you for your service. But if you are a vet and you decided to vote for Trump, I need to know whether or not you're genuinely surprised that he doesn't respect you and never has. I mean, while he was campaigning and pretending like he cared about you, he talked about how John McCain is a loser because he was a prisoner of war. He was very foul-mouthed and unsavory to Khizr Khan, who lost his son as he was in the military. I mean, he never respected you, and he was actually pretty transparent about it. So when they tell me that, oh, well, we voted for Trump because he was telling it like it is. Yeah, he told it like it is. It's just that you ignored that part and decided to listen to the lies where he pretended like he cared about you and would do something for you if you got elected.
So he said, I prefer people who weren't captured. That's unbelievable, referring to John McCain. But look, guys, everything he says is a lie. I don't know when you're going to finally acknowledge that. So he said, oh, the generals, they're the worst. We're not winning with the generals, right? Then what did he do? He got an office, surrounded himself with generals. And he said, go Goldman Sachs and the global financial interests, they're terrible. Got an office, he broke records for how many Goldman Sachs guys are in his administration. He's got five guys from Goldman Sachs, including the president of Goldman Sachs in his administration. And then he's, oh, veterans, I love the veterans. As soon as he's in office, I don't need the veterans. They didn't donate to me at all. It was just a campaign prop. I'm done with him, right? When are you gonna get it? In fact, one of his own friends said he's a pathological liar. He's like, I like the guy, he's fun, but we know he just lies all the time. That's just Donnie.
It's insane. Okay, so let's hear from the vets and how they feel about Trump and his new position as president. One individual says, I won't say anyone told us we were meeting with the president, but it was implied that we would be able to voice our concerns to the boss, the guy who ultimately runs everything, which is the president. Now, they also described the ongoing efforts by veterans groups to meet directly with the president since he was elected as a fruitless effort that has left them feeling completely rebuffed by the White House. Another veteran with American Legion, actually he's the American Legion executive director, Verna Jones, he says, President Trump ran a campaign on helping veterans. When you look at who he has met with since winning, he has to make sure to make veterans a priority still.
Oh my God. So, you know, this is a trick he's done before. Hey, remember, of course, famously at Trump University.
Yeah.
Guys, you get to meet Trump if you pay $35,000 for this nonsense degree that's not a real degree from a non-real university. Mm-hmm. And it turns out when they came to meet Trump, they had a cardboard cutout of Trump. Oh my God, right? This is the kind of scam artist he is.
I know, but he's busy. He's meeting with the Boy Scouts.
So, and tourists, random tourists in the basement. This is the second time he sent in Omarosa to meet with veterans.
Yes.
Like, I thought, like, wait, is she a veteran or something? Why does he keep sending her in?
No, of course she's not. So she was a chaplain for the military guard or something like that. Something ridiculous. And by the way, the vets themselves have showed that they're a little upset about that as well. In fact, in the first meeting with Omarosa, afterwards, one of the attendees, a veteran who wished to remain anonymous, said the following. When Omarosa was introduced, the room collectively gasped. There were people there missing limbs, and she was once a chaplain with the militia. Another in attendance said, there was an obvious disconnect between that transition team and, at that point, New York.
So these guys were ready to give their lives and a lot of times gave their limbs for the war. They're like, on the upside, you get a reality contestant. And if you guys are really good, next meeting, you might even get Khloe Kardashian.
It's embarrassing, man. All right, moving on to some other news. The TSA has very quietly adapted a new, more invasive pat down, although they're not being specific or transparent about what that new pat-down system entails. But what we do know is that this new pat-down will be universal. Currently, there are 5 different types of pat-downs that the TSA does. Apparently that confuses some of the TSA agents because they have to decide which one they will conduct if someone seems suspicious or if the sensors go off. So now they've decided, we're just gonna do a universal enhanced pat down. But again, we just don't know what it is. And the only reason why we know that this has happened is because Bloomberg found out due to TSA agents letting local police officials know, hey, individuals might complain about this, so just expect those complaints.
So I think there's a couple of different reasons why this might be happening. And so let's first of all break down what enhanced pat down could be. There's 2 different kinds of pat downs. There's the one that they do with the back of their hands, and then there's the one that they actually do with the front of their hands. And on the show before, we've described how Anna and I have gotten an enhanced pat down, not only with the back of their hands, I've gotten that many times, but the front of their hands. Mm-hmm. And they will actually touch your genitals with the front of their hands.
Yes.
So it's you can call it a pat down, but I mean it is incredibly invasive, and they actually go inside your pants to do it, and they, for crazy reasons, as Anna explained in another show, they claimed that she had a crotch anomaly, whatever the hell that means.
Went through the full body scanner, wearing skinny jeans, okay, so very, very tight pants. And as I walked out, the TSA agent, a woman, stopped me and she's like, I'm gonna have to do an enhanced pat down. You have a crotch anomaly. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? And I looked at the scanner and my crotch was lit up in the image, right? Mm-hmm. So she wasn't lying to me, but then she asked if I wanted to go into a private room or if I wanted to just do it there. And I was in a rush, I was running late. So I was like, how bad could this possibly be? Let's just do it and get it over with here. And I don't know if it was intentional or if it was an accident, but yeah, she went in my pants, in my underwear, front of the hand, swiped in the front, swiped in the back, did it again. It was crazy and insanely invasive. So
to go inside the underwear is insane, let alone inside the pants. So is there some sort of new security threat? No, it doesn't appear so. It sounds like they're getting, I don't know if it's internal criticism, external criticism about how they're choosing people. Yeah. So they said instead of officers choosing who to search more extensively at random checkpoints, they'll now be doing this more thoroughly. And they said it, quote, lessens, this is according to the TSA, lessens the cognitive burden for our officers and reduces the possibility for confusion with passengers and employees as well.
Okay, so let's stop there for a second. So cognitive burden, think about that for a second. These are TSA agents, these are the people who are supposed to be keeping us safe, and their higher ups are concerned about their cognitive burdens. Oh my, are they gonna have to think too much? Are they gonna have to use some human judgment? Oh, their cognitive burdens. No, you're a TSA agent, you're supposed to be highly trained and efficient in figuring out how to keep people safe, how to do it sufficiently, I guess that's a better word. And so I don't understand why we're having a conversation about their poor cognitive burdens.
Yeah, I think that there are larger things at play here. I doubt that it's TSA agents who are going, oh my God, my cognitive burden is overwhelming. You've got to help me out with this. I think what's happening is that people are saying, hey, I'm getting grief for pulling over these kind of folks, mm-hmm. right? And so, look, I just don't get
what more they want from us, though. We're already going through full body scanners where you can see everything. You can see everything. We're already getting patted down. Like, what more do they want?
Well, look, but then they failed the safety test. Then the Department of Homeland Security tries to sneak in guns and bombs, obviously fake ones, but see if they get caught. And most of the time they don't get caught. They can't find the damn things. So then they get in trouble. And then there's pressure to, to target people who are Muslim or from the Middle East or who look that way, etc. So look, it's not an easy job, but here's my point. Let's use human judgment. So don't profile based on race, ethnicity, etc. I think that you could use what most people have found to be effective, most security agencies throughout the world, which is based on behavior and based on outward things that you can see. If they buy a one-way ticket, it is more likely So look, sometimes I buy one-way tickets, but if that makes me fall to the category of people who are more likely to blow up a plane, I get it, then sometimes I'll get a pat down, etc., right? People who are acting nervous, who are sweating, etc. Maybe you're just running through the airport and you're sweating, I understand, but those are better markers. And if you have 2, 3, 4 of those markers, then they should, based on the things that you are actually doing, give you more of some sort of, whether it's a pat down or further examination. For them to just say, either I'm going to do ethnic profiling, which is unacceptable and non-American, or I don't want a cognitive burden, so I'm just going to go and do the pat down for everybody. Oh, for Christ's sake. No, we don't want that done to everybody. Right. It is really invasive.
Yes,
and yes, people are going to complain, and rightfully so.
So, ethnic profiling is American. It's like inherently American. It's not supposed to be, but it is. So let's keep it real. But another thing that I want to add is, look, on one hand, I feel for the TSA agents, because in order for them to do the type of screening that you just described right now, you need to be well-trained and also well-staffed. The way that we handle security at airports is also very American. Let's understaff and let's find the most invasive, non-human judgment requiring method to screen people. That's a very American thing. It's what we do with our schools. It's now what we do with our security with TSA agents. You need to have a fully staffed TSA team ready to do the type of procedures that you just mentioned. And we're not going to do that. The government is not going to spend money on that. They're going to pretend like they care about keeping us safe, and maybe they do, but their way of keeping us safe is invading our privacy as much as possible and making sure we feel as violated as possible as we go through air travel.
There's got to be some balance between security and privacy, man. And when you're in my pants, you've crossed that line.
Yeah. Okay, right. Let's have fun. I don't know. I got fired up about that story.
Okay.
All right. What do you think about raving before you go to work? Well, there is now a new business model called Daybreaker, and it's happening in major cities throughout the world where individuals pay about $30 per class in order to do about an hour of yoga and then 2 hours of raving. Now, there's no MDMA involved, which makes this super sketchy in my opinion, but some people are having a lot of fun. Okay, so the 3-hour morning party known as Daybreaker is part of what its creators call a movement in 16 cities, including San Francisco, Seattle, Paris, and Tokyo. They say our goal was to create a safe space where people could sweat and express themselves, really let their hair down and let go. We said, let's replace all the negative dark stuff about nightclubs with light, positive, positive stuff.
Yeah, this is why middle America hates us. I'm not buying this at all. I will defend it in a little bit for other reasons, but for me personally, I ain't got no interest. I mean, let's break down all the ways that I despise this movement. Number one, it's a 6 a.m. That means I got to get up at 5:30, 5 o'clock or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not a morning person. And then I got to go do yoga for an hour. I am so out, I can't begin to describe it to you. Then I got to dance around like a fool for 2 hours in the middle of the day with no alcohol, no nothing. Nobody's getting laid. That negative dark stuff that you took out of the nightclub, that's why I went. Right. If you take out the stuff where we're having fun,
that's so true.
Right.
So I mean, no. I don't like the negative stuff, like where it's a scene and you have to look a certain way and like it's clicky. I don't like that stuff. But the best part about a rave is that you're kind of like under the influence, and you're just like, that's how you let go. Like if I'm stone cold sober early in the morning, I'm not going to be like, not in the mood. No, this is essentially a 3-hour workout. That's it. That's all it is. You're working out for 3 hours.
But it looking slightly ridiculous, right? Like you're not high. Nobody's getting laid, and you're sitting around at like 6:35 in the morning, going bah, 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 with those stupid lights and
you
stuff.
You know, interestingly enough, though, some people do meet one another and then hook up later. Like
I'm sure they do, but not that day. I mean, look, it's kind of a
it has to be that day.
Look, if I thought I was going to get laid out of it, I still wouldn't do it. It's too much. They're like, okay, I don't know how much you have to pay me to get me to do an hour of yoga and then 2 hours of dancing without any intoxication at all. When I was single, if you promised me sex then, I'd probably do it. But still, you see my point, right?
I think there is a certain demographic that finds this appealing, and I totally get it. I imagine it's more like the artsy type, the people who are already into like dance, to begin with. And then that kind of annoys me too, because I danced for a very long time, from 3 to about 19, and like choreographed like every type of dancing you can imagine, ballet, jazz, hip hop, whatever. And the thing that annoyed me the most about that was how seriously people took it.
Oh yeah.
And then like so, the show offs in the front of the class that are like,
yeah, totally.
Like, oh God, I can't stand it. And then even when you take those classes at the gym, oh, those show off dancers.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a good dancer, but come on. Like, I don't know. So that kind of annoyed me about this, because I imagine that you're going to be in a room full of those people.
Oh, totally. Look, and it's a little bit of a money making scheme too, because the clubs, I'm sure that the idea that came up with like, hey, we're open at night, but we got nothing going on in the morning. Oh, I got a great idea. We'll get people to dance in the morning when they're not even drunk. We'll double the money, right?
Yeah.
So now my defense of them is, it's a free country. So if this is what you're into, bless your heart. Go nuts. Rave all morning long.
No, I want to ban it.
Yeah, I remember this in West Hollywood. There was a guy who was jogging, but he wasn't jogging. He was literally prancing. He would like, and he was like skipping and hopping. And I was like, I love that I live in a country where this dude gets to do that to his heart's content.
Yeah, yeah.
So go nuts. Have at it, Hoss. But count me out. Just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, then they said, oh, and some people were in costumes. I got to get up at 5 in the morning, put on a costume to go do yoga and raving. They're like, but it's okay. Sometimes you get swept up in a conga line. It's not for me, man. It's for other folks.
I'm curious to see if people sneak drugs in there. They have to.
They're going to go to work, but who knows? Maybe they, like, especially in New York, maybe like that's... like, yeah, of course, let's go to a club in the morning, get high, and then go to work.
Maybe. I don't know. I find it fascinating.
It is. God bless America. Okay, last one. I promised. Yes. I promised Samuel Jackson. And members, you got Aggressive Progressive coming up at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Actually, Aggressive Progressive is live for everybody at 9 o'clock Eastern. Okay? So everybody check that out. The first segment's live, and members get the whole thing, tytnetwork.com/join. That's all I'm saying. Next.
All right. Samuel L. Jackson has been critical of how casting directors have decided to cast black British actors in American films as opposed to black American actors. Now, the recent example that he gave was the film Get Out, which is a pretty good film. You should go check it out. Jackson suggested that Jordan Peele's satirical horror film Get Out, which starred British actor Daniel Kaluuya as an African-American man falling victim to white liberal racism, could have benefited from having an American actor as its lead. So here's the actor that was cast, in case you guys didn't see the film. And he was actually phenomenal. I thought that he did really good in the film, or did very well in the film. He says, there are a lot of black British actors in these movies. I tend to wonder what that movie, Get Out, would have been with an American brother who really feels that.
So part of Samuel Jackson's point was that especially for movies like Selma, where Martin Luther King was played by a British actor, you know, if you live in this country, and this country honestly had a deeper history of slavery, racism, discrimination than Great Britain did, well, then you might have more visceral reaction, and that might help your acting. It's an interesting case to make. I both agree and disagree with it in parts.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the whole point of acting is that the actor is acting, right? And so I don't care if it's a black guy from Britain or if it's a black guy from the United States. I care about whether or not that guy is the best fit for the role. And so I thought that in this case, the actor did a great job in the role. And so I understand the concerns of Samuel L. Jackson, but at the same time, I just feel like it's an unfair criticism, because if you're just casting people who play themselves, then it's not interesting, right? Mm-hmm. I think that actors are supposed to act. And in this case, that's exactly what happened. And the actor was great. What does annoy me, though, is where, and this happened in a recent film, they'll cast like a non-Armenian woman to play an Armenian in a movie, right? And it's like, there's Armenian actresses, why don't you just hire the Armenian actors instead, you know?
Well, that criticism is not that far removed from what Samuel Jackson
is. I think it is. Okay, so how is it any different from a white person playing an Asian person?
So no, what Samuel Jackson is saying is that black Americans have a different experience than blacks in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So in fact, here, let me quote him again here. He says, Daniel grew up in a country where they've been interracial dating for 100 years. What would a brother from America have made of that role? Some things are universal, but not everything. So look, overall, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. The whole point of acting is acting. Yeah. You take on a different role. So, and I'm not sure. And then the woman who played Coretta Scott King in Selma was also a British actress. Mm-hmm. She claimed the opposite. Hey, since I didn't live that experience in America, I come at it from a different perspective that an African-American actress might not be able to separate their emotions out of it or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's total horseshit, right? So the part that annoyed me and where I started to agree with Samuel Jackson mm-hmm. is let me quote The Guardian here. Asked why so many British black actors are cast in American roles, Jackson replied, they're cheaper than us, for one thing. They don't cost as much. And they, the casting agents and directors, think they're better trained because they're classically trained. Now, I get the economics of wanting to hire actors who aren't as expensive, mm-hmm. right? But this whole classically trained stuff, because a lot of the British actors, you train in the theater. So the theater actors are better than the non-theater actors. Hate it, can't stand it, don't believe it at all. So if that gets under Samuel Jackson's skin, I totally agree with him. Theater acting is totally different than movie acting. So that it's not any better. I mean, what is this, like back in the days of before the talkies began? You know, like mm-hmm. they used to look down on the movie actors. They're like, oh, please, I do declare, ruffians. Mm-hmm. Not like the real actors in the theater. In the theater, they overact because they got to reach the guy all the way up over there who can't hear it. So that's why they're always screaming and like over dramatic. Well, I say, Charles. Right? Like, oh, Jesus Christ, I hate that because mm-hmm. it looks so fake. Mm-hmm. I would argue the movie actors are better than the theater actors. So, and I know for the real actors, they're like, oh, my God, what did he just say? That is shocking, right? Mm-hmm. So, overall, you're black American, black British. Nah, you know, I don't think Jackson makes that compelling a case on that.
Yeah.
But the whole, on the other hand, if they think the theater actors are better, then I go back to being on Jackson's side. Like, really, Samuel Jackson, for example, because he wasn't classically trained in British theater, is not as good an actor? Hell no. I don't believe that at all.
Yeah, I just don't care. As long as the acting's good. I'm being disingenuous about the whole Armenian thing either. If that person knows how to play a good Armenian actress, then fuck it. Just hire them, okay? I don't really care. I don't care.
But you know, look, one last thing about this. John Boyega, who is one of the stars of Star Wars, said, black Brits versus African American, a stupid ass conflict we don't have time for. So fair point, of course. But on the other hand, he originally, I didn't know this, did the Star Wars role in his normal British accent. Mm-hmm. And people are like, that's a little unbearable. So do it in an American accent. Which I'm a little jingoistic sometimes. So that's why I like this story. I'm like, I'm kind of with Samuel Jackson here, mm-hmm. right? Like, people don't want to, it's British sounds snobby. So
it
like.
But also, it's funny because people also think it sounds smart.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And look, my British friends, I'm not getting on you. God bless your heart. And we elected Donald Trump. So you got a case to make that perhaps. You might be a little smart on this. On the other hand, you voted for Brexit.
Yeah, I was about to right? say. Yeah.
So, and of course, it'd be intelligence has nothing to do with the accent. Of course, right? All I'm saying is, don't get on us, in this case, American actors, for not being trained in the British theater. And then we'll have Samuel Jackson lay off you guys.
But it's American casting directors who think that the theater trained actors from from Britain are better. It's not British casting agents.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And so that kind of snooty attitude where the theater is the best, not buying it.
Down with the theater. I'm kidding. I like the theater, actually.
Okay. I prefer Samuel Jackson.
Okay.
All right. Anyways, we are out of time, folks. In the post game, Anna will drag someone.
Yeah.
Okay. And I will explain the deep state. That's pretty good. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member and hear all that. Bye-bye.